You're listening to the ISF Podcast for your organization's better cybersecurity. Your host, ISF CEO Steve Durbin, is an expert in leadership, business culture transformation, and cyber strategies for today's top enterprises. I'm producer Tavia Gilbert. Today's episode will focus on the challenges of the cyber landscape in the United States as Steve sits down with Yolanda Williams, who is the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency's Cybersecurity Coordinator in the state of Florida. Steve and Yolanda dive deep into her work communicating cyber in a region where, for many, it isn't top of mind. They also discuss the unique challenges posed by state sovereignty and lack of standardization between local stakeholders. We hope that Yolanda's many examples will resonate with listeners across the United States and across the pond, too.
Yolanda, it's lovely to have you on the podcast with me today. Thank you so much for joining me.
A pleasure to be here, Steve. Thank you for inviting me.
Now, you've got a really interesting role because you're the Cybersecurity State Coordinator for the state of Florida. And that really covers a whole range of different issues across the critical infrastructure, from physical, cyber. And the piece that really interests me that I want to explore further with you is just the various different organizations that you must have to deal with, because that is something that certainly for our listeners, I know is a real challenge. So just give us a little bit of insight, if you would, please, into exactly what the scope of the role is first, so that the listeners can get an understanding for what a challenging position you actually hold.
So you are correct. It is a very challenging position. The scope is very broad. Me in particular, I work with specifically SLTT or state, local, tribal, and territorial, and public and private. I'm kind of all over the place. When I first came on board with CISA in 2021, they brought me on board as a CSA/CSC. I'm still fulfilling both roles right now. So the CSA is the cybersecurity advisor. We go out, we do assessments and all those type of things, the public speaking engagements. But the CSC does those things specifically for the state. So usually a state agency will reach out and I'm the person that they call to get the right people in the room talking. If there's an issue going, I'm their first point of contact. I will caveat that with, you mentioned cyber and physical. But we also have a physical security cadre called the Protective Security Advisors. And they're the ones that actually go out and tell you if your windows are correct or if your computer's facing the right way, that kind of thing.
Okay. You're in the state of Florida. Now, Florida does have a nasty habit of being hit occasionally by things like hurricanes. And, you know, there are some challenges. Members who are listening to this from the ISF will know that we did have a little bit of a scare last year because we did our annual Congress in Florida and you had a hurricane come through just a week, I think it was, before we were there. But that in itself must present a different cyber kind of challenge. And we've talked a lot at the ISF about the fact that you can't divorce cyber anymore from things like natural disasters. Tell us a little bit about how you plan for those sorts of eventualities on the cyber side of things.
So one of the things that I can say, especially for Florida, they have been really proactive with getting both of these sides of the house together, the protective security advisors and the cyber advisors. They actually implemented what's called ESF 20. It's a new ESF or emergency services function. We usually sit at the EOC. If things are going on, they'll call and reach out. They do rely on CISA as much as FBI and other organizations to specifically handle those type of situations. One of the big things that we saw last year was FEMA, and they had a lot of issues where threat actors will pretend to be FEMA, and they have those scams going around. We can help you get your house back together. We're FEMA, we're going to come out. And then they basically take their money or take the money that was supposed to be allocated for them and distribute it to nefarious actors.
So that's a good example, isn't it, of how the two elements of crime have come together. That physical side of things, the old fraud, basically, is what we used to call it, taking advantage of some of the infrastructure that cyber provides, I guess. One of the challenges I know that a lot of people listening to the podcast face is that of communication. You know, really getting the message across of how you can be safe online, how you can spot some of the things you've just mentioned. You have to communicate with a whole range of stakeholders who I suppose must have different degrees of cyber knowledge, I would imagine, from experts down to just plain old users. How do you go about tailoring your communication?
So depending on who we're reaching out to, some are looking for metrics. Others are looking for a deep dive into what's going on. They want to get a little more granular with it. like you said, it depends on the audience that I'm speaking with. I've done public speaking engagements or presentations and presented them to CISO, and they're definitely looking for resources. Their organization may not have the finances to do it. CISO offers, we don't say free anymore, CISO offers a lot of no-cost services that these agencies can take advantage of and not have to worry about the cost of it. There's the cybersecurity grants, and I know with the change in administrations and things like that, there's been some challenges with getting that taken care of. But at the end of the day, CISA's goal is to support our agencies, our entities, to support the nation. So we want to make sure that we are providing those services no matter how many folks we have. We used to have 6 CSAs in Florida. We're down to 3 now. Again, we started with less than that, so it's not surprising. We've worked with less before, and I'm used to it. Reaching out to those audiences, that's the specific thing. I know I hear a lot of people say dumb it down, but you don't want to dumb it down. You just want to make sure that you're tailoring it specifically. You know, you may have technical folks who are looking for, okay, what was the ransomware? Who did it? Who deployed it? How was it deployed? What was the payload? All those type of things. And they want to get into the deep dive of it. A lot of individuals don't. I'll speak to healthcare individuals, and they're more looking at, well, I'm not a target. I'm a small doctor's office. I'm not a target. And one of the things we try to get across to everyone is you are definitely a target. If you have a US IP address, you're a target.
Right.
They will use your IP address as a hop to a greater organization, especially if you have ties in medical healthcare. They're tied into hospitals and radiology clinics and all these different areas that all have PII out there that's available. So making sure that you're at least as secure as the people that you're contacting, that you're connected to.
But Yolanda, how do you get that message across? I know that when we talk about small businesses or people who are, as you mentioned, some of the healthcare professionals there, they're so focused on their core business, right? That they don't have either perhaps the skill sets or indeed the ability or willingness to allocate the appropriate resources. Tell us how you actually go about getting some of those messages across, because I know that's a real challenge.
So we use different organizations. I know one of them is the MSISAC to get messages across. We do cyber advisories that come across. A lot of times when I reach out to organizations, they're already getting the CISA bulletins or the feeds. They're just putting it into a folder and not really looking at it. So reaching out and saying, hey, did you see this week? We want to make sure that you saw it because this covered something that's going to affect your organization. So getting the message out, it has been a challenge. I won't lie. It's been a challenge simply because CISA is a new organization. We're still fairly new, and a lot of organizations have not heard of us yet. In Florida, however, they've definitely heard of us because we've been reaching out. We're sending emails. I'm calling and letting them know I'm here. I'm here to support you. Things like this, which your ISF podcast, making sure that folks that are listening to it, they know who to reach out to when before something is going on. That's one of the things that we try to preach as well, is reach out before something happens. The last thing you want to do is in the middle of an incident or an event is to have to figure out who you need to call. So we do TTXs. A lot of times we have another one coming up here in Orlando and one in Tallahassee in August, doing TTXs and walking them through scenarios. Just getting the conversation started is the biggest thing. Getting the conversation started so that they know who they need to reach out to, how they need to reach out to them.
And once you get them together, once you get the conversation started, do you find that they are surprised, receptive, view it as being a waste of their time? What are some of the responses that you're getting?
In 2021, there was not a lot of reception. They were not responsive to it. 2025, they are very responsive to it. I have never had so many individuals and organizations reaching out specifically to say, hey, can you give me a services brief? Can you tell me about what you all offer, what you don't do? One of the things that we try to make clear is there are different lanes for each of the organizations. So like we say that CISA is like the firefighters will come in and put the fire out. We're not going to rebuild your house. Like FBI is looking for a criminal. They're looking for somebody to blame for whatever's going on. That's not our role. We just want to get you back to a steady state. That focus on resilience is primary for CISA. How quickly can you bounce back?
And what is the trend for cyber attacks in the state of Florida at the moment? Is it increasing? Is it flat?
It's increasing across the nation. It's not just Florida. One of the things that we say is there's no state line when it comes to threat actors. There are some specific things like in Florida with ports and dams and that kind of, well, ports. But say in Texas, they're the electrical grid. So it could be different things that they're looking at as far as critical infrastructure, but it's all the same.
It's interesting you say that there are no borders, because one of the things, as a sort of an external observer of the United States, and indeed I visit quite regularly, but one of the things that frustrates me no end is this lack of a consistent federal set of regulations, because that to me would seem to be the logical step to making life so much easier for so many businesses. Because as you say, there is no state border, right?
There are federal guidelines for federal agencies. However, we respect our states and their sovereignty. And one of the things I found in Florida definitely was a lack of collaboration, even from the city to the county. There's nothing structured across the board. They're working on it with digital services. They're working on getting those things in place where we say, okay, no matter which agency you go to, you know that they're using this type of software. They have a software deprecation list. They're not holding on to things. Just standardization. That's the word I'm looking for. Standardization across the board in each particular state. Now, are they all going to be the same? Of course not. But some type of standardization would definitely help as far as vulnerabilities and threats. So you know what's coming. You know what's out there, what's being exploited in the wild. We put out those catalog on CISA's website to let folks know these are the vulnerabilities that's out there. One of the other things that we offer is that cyber hygiene program. I cannot stress that one enough to every organization. I preach that to every organization we go to, making sure that those forward-facing IP addresses give us permission. We'll scan it and let you know what's vulnerable. We're not going into your network. We don't want to see behind the curtain, but we definitely want to let you know where you're exposed.
Every conversation I have these days is incomplete without talking about artificial intelligence. Is that something that you're increasingly using on your side, or indeed something you're seeing being used very much more by cyber threat actors?
We are using it on our side as well. The problem with AI, or maybe not a problem, is that it can be used for good and used for bad. And depending on whose hands it's in is what you're going to get. So making sure that somebody on my side is aware of what could happen. One of the things that CISA is focusing on right now is data security, making sure what you're putting in there is secure and what you're getting out, looking at integrity.
Again, one of the things I think that listeners not necessarily struggle with, but find a little bit frustrating because it's a constant process, and you touched on it there, is trying to ensure that users understand the importance of data integrity, particularly when we get into the world of AI, those sorts of things. Given the very broad audience that you have, how aware are people of just the value of data and therefore the need to be protecting that as a key to running their business?
Usually when we go out to an organization, I can speak for myself and Region 4, we go out, we do these assessments, and that's when the light bulb goes off saying, oh, I never even thought to look at that or ask about that. One of the things we talk about is cyber is everybody's job. Mm-hmm. So if we go to an organization, we give them a list of the individuals that we recommend for each of the different assessments. And they're always surprised at the variation of folks that we want in the room. You get all these people in the room talking, and all of a sudden it's, are you doing that? I think we're doing that. Maybe we're not doing that. Oh, maybe we need to do this. Especially with one of our assessments, the EDM, the External Dependencies Management Assessment. That one really I've seen get the most conversation, because folks don't know what those vulnerabilities are when they're signing contracts.
Right.
They're not looking at, okay, is this vendor going to be able to provide this if whoever they're relying on can't provide it? So making sure the supply chain, looking at the supply chain for EDM is huge right now. One of the things that I wanted to say about ADI as well with the AI, with the data security, is partnering with multiple organizations. So that's one of the things that we do. I know right now we have a bulletin out or an advisory out with NSA and some other entities, mm-hmm. advising agencies, entities, individuals on what to look for, what not to look for, how to secure that data. How do you know when something's happened to it? How do you know if it's changed? Do you have anything in place that says, oh, wait, they're pulling this from a source that we didn't put in here?
And you mentioned the supply chain, of course, something that I know has had a lot of focus and attention in the United States over the last number of months, particularly as to where products and services might be coming from. What are the sort of steps that you recommend people take to ensure that they have at least transparency across the supply chain, if not total security?
One of the steps that I recommend across the board for anyone that I'm talking to is looking at the language in your contracts. making sure that language is covering not just what you're purchasing. I had a situation where an organization bought computers. The person who ordered the computers, they were not an IT person, didn't know anything about it. So they ordered something with 1 or 2 megs of RAM, with nowhere near enough to run what they needed to run. They couldn't go back because in the contract, it said, this is what we agreed to. This is all we have to supply. So they had to reorder and get all this extra memory that they didn't know they needed. So making sure that you're looking at that contract language and have somebody that's looking at it that understands the lexicon, understands what is required. You can't just hire somebody off the street and say, oh yeah, write this contract. And they don't know what should be in the contract.
But one of the challenges, Yolanda, that I'm seeing is that contracts are becoming so much more complicated. And here we are talking about what some people might think is a very simple mistake that this purchaser made that you're quoting there. But there are huge complexities associated today with the contracts. And most small businesses, I would say, do not have the resources in place to be able to go through that with a fine-tooth comb. Very many medium-sized organizations don't have it. And so that for me is becoming one of the real challenges that our members certainly are coming to us with, which is how can we, at a time when we perhaps don't have the resources, at a time when things are becoming more complicated, what are some of the tips that we can actually put in place to make sure that we're not caught out by some of these things? Any advice there?
One of the areas that I didn't even know was a thing for a long time was cyber law. Cybersecurity is, I won't say new, but securing it is fairly new. And bringing somebody in, if you can't afford it, utilizing those resources, go online. The resources are out there. We have best practices guides out on CISA's website that you can utilize to give you an idea of what you should be looking for, especially with supply chain. The biggest thing is making sure that whoever you're ordering from is not a single point of failure. I know with the state in particular and some federal agencies, they have these rules in place when it comes to purchasing that is the sole source that you have to purchase from. But sometimes with the sole source, they may not be the best option, especially for a small business or individual. We just had this here in Florida where someone, it was a sole source. This company was one employee. They didn't know at the time. And they were managing multiple networks for all of these different agencies, these different counties and cities. So when they were compromised, everything in their chain was compromised. So again, looking at that security, asking the right questions, and that's what that EDM does, gets you to ask the right questions. Where am I on your priority list? If a hurricane does hit, do I know when we're going to get power back? Do I know how much gas or fuel we'll need to run if we can't get back up in a week? Because a lot of times they'll say, oh, we have enough in here for 3 days or 7 days. What happens after that? Where's your backup? So backup is a key thing there, making sure that you're covering that.
I think one of the other things that I found people are starting to take for granted, really, is the fact that they believe their data is safe because they've backed it up to the cloud. Any advice you've got for people who are in that position?
If you're backing it up to the cloud and a hurricane hits and you don't have power, you're not getting it from the cloud. We often recommend having those physical backups not in the same place where you are. It's reminding me of so many things. We had one organization where we did an assessment and we talked about their backups and we asked, where are you storing your backups? And they were storing them in the building next to them.
It was convenient.
However, if that building got destroyed, the building next to it, 9 times out of 10, is going to be destroyed too, or flooded, or whatever the situation is. Weather-wise, so making sure that they are somewhere that you can get to.
Right.
And that's where that backup with generators and that type of thing comes into play. Or do you have a site, a cold site, a warm site, some kind of site that you can fall back to where all of your things are going?
People listening to this, if they didn't know about you or if they've got particular questions, how do they get hold of you? What do they do?
Shoot me an email, yolanda.williams@mail.cisa.dhs.gov. But that's definitely the best way. If you are in Region 4, we cover 8 states, go to CISA's website. It'll give you a list of all the regions and how to get in contact with each region.
Yolanda, it's been lovely talking to you and just getting a little snippet into some of the great work that you and your colleagues are obviously doing. So thank you very much indeed for joining me today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. Thanks, Yolanda.
Thank you. Take care.
Special thanks to this week's guest, Yolanda Williams. We'll be back with another new episode next week. In the meantime, if you enjoyed today's episode, please take a moment to rate and review the podcast. And we'd be pleased if you'd consider sharing the episode. To become an ISF member, get in touch with Steve directly at steve.durbin@securityforum.org or on LinkedIn. Check out all our media and resources. All of it is there to support you at securityforum.org. The ISF podcast is produced by Talkbox Productions and Tavia Gilbert. Thanks for listening.